Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, Mike. We've got a great study this week.
We have a great study. I know you're a big biker and an outdoorsman, and the question is, If we're trying to lose weight, do we still have to bike as much as you do, or can we take a pill? You have a poem that obviously addresses this issue of weight loss using a pill. There are a number of medications that are approved by the FDA for the treatment of overweight or obesity. None of them have been home runs. The goal of all of them is to reduce weight and perhaps maintain weight at a lower level. That's intended to improve health status of the patient and reduce things like diabetes, et cetera. And we also are looking for drugs that have very few adverse side effects, et cetera. Along comes a drug, semaglutide. It is a GLP-1 agonist. Listeners may know it is often used to treat type 2 diabetes. It is administered as a once weekly sub-Q injection. It has been demonstrated to result in weight reduction, as well as hyperglycemia and lipid problems, but it has not been proven or approved for the treatment of obesity. The question is, does it work for weight loss? Is this something, even if it's off-label, that we should be trying with our patients that really are desperate to lose weight? The article that you're going to review for us comes from JAMA. It was published in 2021. It attempts to answer the question, is once weekly subcutaneous semaglutide an effective adjuvant to intensive behavioral therapy for weight loss in obese adults without diabetes? So can we be using this in our heavy patients that have not developed diabetes? Mark?
Yeah, this is a very interesting study. These tides, the semaglutide, exenatide, and liraglutide and the like are being heavily promoted for type 2 diabetes. They're also being promoted for other indications. And there is increasingly evidence to support some of these claims. I think the strength of this study, before I start, is the duration. I think a limitation is generalizability, as we'll see. So they found adults without diabetes who tried at least once previously to lose weight and either had a BMI of 27 or higher plus one weight-related comorbidity like hypertension, or they had a BMI of 30 or higher regardless of comorbidities. It was about 80% women, 76% white, average age was 46, and the average BMI was 38. So most had significant obesity, and 611 patients were randomized to once weekly semaglutide or matched placebo. The semaglutide was initially a quarter milligram, and they titrated the dose up every 4 weeks till they hit a target dose of 2.4 milligrams by week 16. Patients also got, and this is the important part that kind of inhibits generalizability, is they also got a low-calorie diet, about 1,000 calories for the first 8 weeks, and then a 1,200 to 1,800 calorie per day diet for the rest of the 68-week study. Everybody got an exercise prescription. They had 30 individual intensive behavioral visits with a dietitian. But on the bright side, they did have complete follow-up for 93% of the participants. So using intention-to-treat analysis, which is appropriate, folks in the semaglutide group lost significantly more weight than the placebo group, about 16% of their total body weight in semaglutide, only 6% for placebo. More people in that group also lost at least 5% of their body weight, 87 versus 48%, so the NNT of 2. Significantly more semaglutide participants also had weight losses of 10% and 15% compared to the placebo group. So bottom line, once weekly sub-Q semaglutide used as an adjunct to intensive behavioral therapy did significantly increase the likelihood that overweight or obese adults without diabetes will lose at least 5% of their body weight and did have a higher overall
you know, I'm usually a skeptic about these things, but this looks pretty positive. I just want to make sure that I understand what your concerns are. In terms of generalizability, it seems like the placebo group was a good control. I mean, they got everything except the drug, and compliance was good. I think what you're suggesting is just that it's a little bit unrealistic for doctors in the community to be able to deliver the education and the restricted diet and exercise and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I think, so I think you probably wouldn't see that 16% reduction in weight. You might see closer to 10%, given that we had 6% reduction in the placebo group, if you don't have all of those other things going on. So it might not be quite as impressive a result in a more typical setting where you don't have the resources to do this kind of intensive therapy, and where patients might not be as motivated to stick with a very low calorie diet initially. You know, having said that, the other question that I have is this a class effect? There are oral GLP-1 receptor agonists out there, and this is the subcutaneous once weekly injection. Is it a class effect? If so, can it be an oral medication? Of course, the cost of these medications, they would love to keep patients on these, you know, forever. God. And this is, you know, a way to, you know, they cost hundreds of dollars a month. That's a lot of money. You know, I think we have to think about the cost effectiveness of it at a health policy kind of level. And hopefully we'll have a cheaper generic version of these drugs eventually that will make it maybe more cost effective.
Yeah. I mean, I think you raise a million questions. We could talk for an hour about this. You know, in terms of cost effectiveness, obviously the question is, you know, given the cost of the drug now, you know, what are we preventing, and how many of those people that don't have diabetes would go on to develop diabetes and then need to be put on expensive drugs and develop premature heart disease, et cetera. And so the cost effectiveness analysis could get pretty dicey. Do we know anything about using these drugs in non-diabetic patients in terms of long-term side effects?
No, I don't think there are any. This is probably the longest-term study in non-diabetic patients. I mean, in general, the safety appears to be pretty good with this class of drugs. So I think that's maybe, you know, hopefully not a major concern. But the, you know, again, how well they will work in when the indications get broadened, right? Whenever we have a new drug, it gets tested in a very high risk population. These patients, BMI of 38. Okay. So it helped somebody that was 250 pounds lose 16% of their body weight. So they got down to 215 or so, which is great. And that can be really life altering. And that can be really good in terms of their mobility and joints and ability to exercise and be mobile. So there are a lot of good things potentially. Would you have that same degree of benefit in somebody who had a BMI of 30? And I didn't see subgroup analyses here in this, but you know, if you had a BMI of that's more, you know, typical in the sort of just overweight range, do you have the same degree of benefit? So a lot of questions. I think a lot of good data here, and I think certainly highly encouraging that this may be, you know, effective. But again, a lot of questions raised as well.
Thanks for bringing this to our attention, and we'll talk again in a week.
Looking forward to it.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.